Welcome, and thank you for standing by. At this time, all participants are in a listen-only mode until the question-and-answer session of today's call. At that time, if you'd like to ask a question, please press star one. Today's conference has been recorded. If you have any objections, please disconnect at this time. I would now like to turn the meeting over to Ms. Leslie Gordon. You may begin.
Thank you, Ernest, and welcome to everybody who's called in today. We have four speakers today. Wendy Stovall will represent the U.S. Geological Survey Hawaiian Volcano Observatory. Ashley Sears will represent NOAA's National Weather Service. Jessica Farrakhan will represent Hawaii Volcanoes National Park. And Tim Sakahara will represent the Hawaii Department of Transportation. I will reintroduce those people and spell their names as each one of them speaks. I want to start out with Wendy Stovall. That's Wendy, the usual spelling. Stovall, S as in Sam, T as in Tom, O, V as in Victor, A-L-L. Go ahead, Wendy. What's today's update?
Hey, this is Wendy Stovall. So today we are still seeing continued activity in both locations on the zone and at the summit. This is kind of more of the same that we've been seeing over the past few days. The eruptive activity in the lower East Rift zone is continuing to migrate back to the west along a fissure line. There's an approximately 2 mile long line of activity of fountaining, low fountaining of lava, and then those fountains are feeding massive lava flows that are channelized going down to the coast. There's two primary channels that are going down from the locus of activity, and the easternmost channel has split into two down at the coast. So now there are three ocean entries at the coast. Laves is issuing off of those ocean entries, and hopefully we'll get a weather update to talk a little bit about that. There seems to be a lot of lava being produced by Fissure 7, and that is in Leilani Estates. The flows themselves are moving a little bit to the north, but mostly to the south from that point. And we have field crews on the ground there monitoring the progress of that. They've had a hard time getting closer to those flows because they are so voluminous. And then if we go up to the summit is pretty socked in today. It's very cloudy, and so we haven't had a whole lot of great visual observations of what's happening at the summit, but we do have some observations from cameras that are up on Mauna Kea. I'm trying to get the exact information about where these images are coming from, but we've seen a couple of plumes rise above the clouds from imagery coming from an observatory on Mauna Kea. And we did see a plume go up to about 6,000 feet above sea level, 6,000 to 7,000 feet above sea level this morning, but it was just a minor explosion. And then yesterday afternoon, one went up to about 8,000 feet. And then yesterday at about 5 p.m., there was a magnitude 3.9 earthquake at the summit of Kilauea. That's the general update for today.
Thank you, Wendy. Next, I'd like to introduce Ashley Sears. That's A-S-H-L-E-Y, Sears, S-E-A-R-S. Ashley is a meteorologist with the National Weather Service.
Good morning, everyone. We continue to see the trade wind pattern as has been being briefed for the past couple of days. This trade wind pattern means generally winds are from the northeast in the lower levels. I do want to highlight that today's winds are expected to be the strongest that we've seen all week and that we should see in the coming days, with gusts up to between 20 and 25 miles per hour possible. I mentioned these stronger winds mainly because if there is an explosion or a plume that occurs at the summit, as Wendy has just briefed, there's been a few, we could see the ash being carried a little farther downwind than we have seen in the past couple of days. However, because of this northeast wind, we are still going to continue to see the plume going to the southwest, pretty much from the summit down Highway 11 down to Pahola. I also want to note, though, too, with these gustier winds, the winds can also pick up any ash deposits that have recently fallen and can result in dusty conditions, possibly even reduced visibilities. We haven't had that report yet, but it is a potential with the gustier winds. As such, the National Weather Service does is continuing to issue a special weather statement in effect for the Cal District, accounting for these hazards pretty much until further notice. One thing of note, Wendy was talking about the different plume heights. From a sounding that the Weather Service did earlier today, for your information, it would take a plume height of around 15,000 feet above ground level to have any ash interaction with any of a westerly flow, which would be taking it more towards the Hilo direction. So again, it would have to get to around 15,000 feet. Most of the plumes and explosions we've seen in the past couple of days have been between the 5,000 to 8,000 feet above ground level, which is why we are seeing the ash mainly on that on the northeast trade winds heading down to the southwest from the summit along Highway 11. And then turning our attention to the areas around the fissures, that northeast flow is impacting down there as well during the day. Around the fissures, we do get the winds turning a little bit more to the west during the overnight hours, but they do weaken during the overnight, so we don't see too much of a turn in direction necessarily of any of the fog, primarily. So as long as the sulfur dioxide is being emitted from the fissures, we do expect the development of the fog in the vicinity of the fissures and that northeast flow carrying them to the south and the west. And that looks to be ongoing for the time being. Also mentioned about the lays, with this flow, any of the lays that does form as the lava is entering the ocean should keep the threat immediate around where that lays is forming at the coastline or taking it out a little into the ocean. And one last thing I want to just touch on, because Wendy did mention about the earthquake, the Pacific Tsunami Warning Center is monitoring every earthquake activity. No tsunami threats at this time by any means, but just to make you aware that we are continuing to monitor every single earthquake that does occur, and products will be issued as needed.
Thank you very much. Our next speaker will be Jessica Farrakane. Jessica is a public information officer with Hawaii Volcanoes National Park. Jessica is spelled the usual way. Farrakane is F as in Frank, E-R-R-A-C-A-N-E. Go ahead, Jessica.
Good morning. Aloha, everybody. Not much new to report. Today is the, if you add them up backwards, today is the 14th day that the park is closed, most of the park. The Kahuku unit began its new increased hours yesterday. So Kahuku is open Wednesdays through Sundays, closed Mondays and Tuesdays from 9 a.m. to 3 p.m. Kahuku is located about an hour south of the main entrance, and it is on the slopes of Mauna Loa. We also have rangers, like I mentioned before, at Moku Papapa Discovery Center in downtown Hilo Tuesdays through Saturdays from 9 a.m. to 4 p.m. And that's really all I have. Thank you.
Thank you, Jessica. Our next speaker is Timothy Sakahara. Tim is the Public Information Officer for the Hawaii Department of Transportation. Timothy is spelled in the usual way. Sakahara is S as in Sam, A-K-A-H-A-R-A. Go ahead, Tim.
Yes, aloha. Thank you very much. I appreciate the opportunity to get our message out. And first, just wanted to reiterate and thank all of our partners that we're working with at HDOT, including the federal and county levels. I believe everybody is committed with the same goals in mind to keep access and mobility open for the communities that are impacted by the eruption events, not only for mobility, but also for evacuation purposes if necessary. Right now, Highway 130 does remain open and accessible for local traffic and is the primary focus for our efforts of keeping that mobility and connectivity open for those surrounding communities. The steel plates that are out there over the cracks are and have been performing well, which is the main reason why we have been able to keep that roadway open. And we will continue to monitor the conditions and work and make any sort of adjustments necessary in order to keep Highway 130 open for those folks to use.
Thank you, Tim.
Answer more as well, yeah. But I, you know, either now or in the Q&A session. Sorry about that.
Thank you. Yes. Before we go to the Q&A session, I'd like to just reiterate to reporters, we have four people online that can answer questions from quite a variety of backgrounds. We can answer questions about the geology and volcanology of Kilauea Volcano, the National Weather Service and winds and weather, Hawaii Volcanoes National Park, and the Hawaii Department of Transportation. All reporters, please limit your initial question to one question at a time so that we can take as many questions as possible. So, Ernest, we're ready to take the first question.
Thank you. We will now begin the question and answer session. If you'd like to ask a question, please press star 1. Record your name and affiliation clearly when prompted. Your name and affiliation is required to introduce your question. To withdraw your question, you may press star 2. Once again, if you'd like to ask a question, please press star 1. One moment, please, for our first question. Our first question comes from Michael Phillips with Weatherboy. Your line is now open.
Hi, this is Michael Phillips with Weatherboy Weather. My question is for the National Weather Service. Yesterday, NOAA had a media call to talk about a malfunction of the GOES-17 weather satellite that was destined to become the GOES-West satellite later this summer. With the failure of that weather satellite, is there any fears or concerns by the Weather Service by not having imagery and data around the volcano activity for the summer?
Yes. No, there isn't a concern at this time. We are able to still utilize the satellite that's currently up there and are able to maintain a rapid scan, so getting that up-to-date information. So at this time, there is not the concern that we will not be able to have the coverage for the time being, of the volcano.
Great, thank you.
Our next question comes from Elima Lumez with EOS. Your line is now open.
Thank you. Have you been able to quantify the volume of lava now being erupted, and how does that compare to the volumes you were seeing in the first days of the eruption?
Hi, this is Wendy Stovall at the USGS. We have not quantified the volume of lava. It's something that people are working on, and it's more that we're going to try to quantify how much is coming out per, you know, the volume per second or the volume per hour, but we have not gotten a firm number on that yet.
Thank you.
Our next question comes from Tom Callis with the Tribune Herald. Your line is now open.
Yeah, Tim, can you discuss any, I guess, backup plans for Highway 130? I understand some heat-resistant concrete might be being flown in. Are there any other materials that might be tried?
Yes, thanks, Tom. Yes, there are multiple avenues we're looking to take on Highway 130 to maintain and ensure that it does stay open. Right now, there are the steel plates over it, which are performing well over the cracks. But should there be any other developments on the roadway, we are working on and planning for some contingencies in order to keep that roadway open, including filling the cracks and then having additional heat-resistant plates over so that we can continue to drive over it. We are looking at other ways to fill it, the cracks, in order to kind of insulate, if you will, the roadway and the vehicles above in order to maintain it and go over it. You know, fortunately, at this point, we haven't had to use those in addition to the steel plates, but we are working toward that end in order to, you know, have different contingencies available just in case for Highway 130.
Thank you.
Our next question is from Jim Roop with Westwood One News. Your line is now open.
Thank you. Hi, good morning, everyone. I guess this first question is for Wendy. It seems there are a number of variables, Mother Nature being the number one variable here. But can you explain the science of volcanology, if I got that right? Is it an exact science? And what makes, for instance, like lava change direction? It seems like it's heavy and moves, and what makes it change direction, or do I have that wrong?
This is a really interesting question, and maybe it deserves a follow-up after we get off the call, because I feel like this is kind of a complex thing, and there's probably more leading questions that you could ask to get the information that you want. So just putting it out there, if you want to have a follow-up about this, you can email volcanomedia@usgs.gov, and I'll be happy to talk to you more. So volcanology itself as a science has progressed a lot in the past 100 years. Certainly at HVO, the Hawaiian Volcano Observatory has been in existence for over 100 years, and what used to just be visual observations has morphed into quantifiable data in looking at instruments from seismometers. I mean, it's really a combination of many different types of earth science, and we use lots of different instruments to study the things that are happening underground and looking at what's coming out of the ground, and we use all of that data and information in order to better forecast the way volcanoes will behave. And this is all over the world. The volcanology community internationally is a pretty tight-knit community, and we study volcanoes around the world to better understand how they'll behave. In the United States, there's lots of volcanoes that erupt in Alaska and Hawaii, but you know, in other parts of the world, there are volcanoes that are also erupting all the time, similar to Kilauea, but they're maybe a different type of volcano. So it's an continually evolving and increasingly sophisticated science. But there's still uncertainty, so whether it is exact is, you know, it's not exact. I guess that's the best answer for that. What was the next part?
It's, you know, when we hear, like, when they're talking about the geothermal plant and that the lava is moving away from the plant right now, but that could change. What does that mean that could change? The lava can change direction? If so, what causes that?
Yeah, so lava behaves in a really, yeah, it's liquid rock, right? You can think of it as liquid rock. It's very hot, but as soon as it cools down just a little bit, it starts to harden. As it hardens, it creates its own walls. It's like creating its own fence, creating its own barrier. So the area to the north of the fissure system is slightly uphill, or it's on a little bit of a flat surface. And if lava is moving across a flat surface, it will move more slowly, and it will start to cool, and then it'll create a container for itself. It'll stay insulated and hot inside of that container, but that's what's happening on the north side. So it's building up these walls. There's these perched lava ponds that are surrounding the vents that are, you know, 30 feet high. And these perched walls are pretty stable. Their overflows are happening. It's just like they're piling more material on top of themselves that are cooling. Occasionally, those walls that are containing these perched ponds of lava can fail, just like if you had a swimming pool, an above-ground swimming pool in your backyard, and then somebody, you know, leaned on the side really hard, and it issued forth a kind of a flood of of water. So it would happen in that way, but some of the observations we've been getting from the field about the way that the flows are moving when they're breaking these barriers of the perched ponds is that it will flow, but because the slope is not so great on the north side, it does that thing where it cools on the surface and then it barricades itself again and it will inflate. So material will flow in behind it, but it's going to inflate up instead of, you know, just pour forward down onto the ground because it's creating the barrier around itself, the cooled crust around itself. The flows are primarily moving to the south because it's downhill, and that's what we are going to continue to see. When we do our lava flow forecasts, we use the line of steepest descent for the flow field. We're continually updating the topography in that area based on imagery that we're capturing from these overflights that we're doing. So the geologists out in the field are capturing images. We have these drones that are flying overhead, and we can create three-dimensional maps of the ground as it is forming. And so that informs the models that we're creating to determine where the lava flows will potentially go.
Got it. Thank you very much.
You're welcome.
Our next question comes from Daryl Huff with Hawaii News Now. Your line is now open.
Thank you. We're getting kind of a call of concern from some of the businesses nearby the park that depend on the parks being open for their flow of business. And we understand that you close the park for safety reasons. But is there any kind of consideration or help through national disaster relief or anything like that for loss of business around a park when the park is closed for reasons beyond people's control?
Hi, Daryl. This is Jessica Farrakane with Hawaii Volcanoes National Park. So your question is, would we provide economic relief for communities? I'm not quite sure if I'm tracking your question right.
You know, I really don't know exactly what options you would have. I'm assuming that, you know, if there's a disaster, that small businesses may be able to apply for, you know, loss of business kind of help later on. But in terms of, you know, you folks, are you able, and I think I know the answer to this question, but I just sort of like to hear it, are you able to take into consideration the economic impacts of your closing the park on surrounding communities?
Yeah, so we're really well aware of the economic impact the closure has on people. You know, this is day 14, and we're looking at, you know, based on our 2017 economic impact numbers, which I have a news release on that if you want me to share it with you for last year. This is, you know, the impact is very serious. It's $6.5 million right now if you do the math right. And, you know, we consider that. We know about that. But the number one priority for Hawaii Volcanoes National Park is safety. We want people to stay safe. We want to keep people alive. That's not just visitors. That's also the community. That's also our park staff. The impacts thus far have been very serious, but this is an active volcano, and this is nothing new for the people who live on the island of Hawaii. Kilauea has been erupting, at least in its current form, since 1983. There have been periods where people can't come into the park, but this particular situation with two eruptions happening simultaneously at the summit in the Lower East Rift Zone present a spate of safety and hazard concerns. So we cannot open the park again until it is safe to do so.
Thank you. That's the answer I expected, and I appreciate it.
Our next question comes from Jennifer Kelleher with the Associated Press. Your line is now open.
Folks in Tahala were talking about ash being more abundant after Saturday's explosion. I'm wondering if that was to be expected given maybe wind conditions or the amount of ash, or like but why that explosion and maybe not one that was high, that flew ash higher up. And what other communities could be affected by this level of ash if the winds pick up.
This is Wendy Stovall. I think that this is probably a two-parter, one for me and or one for USGS, and then the airborne part is for NOAA. So we have observed that there are several plumes. There's probably 12 different explosions occurring, at least 12 per day. Some of them are small, some of them are large. They're all producing ash, and sometimes the ash goes up to a higher elevation. If it goes up to a higher elevation, higher altitude, it will travel further downwind. And then, do you want to talk a little bit about that, Ashley?
Yeah, basically, so today does have, as I mentioned before, so today's winds are the strongest. So you could see that stronger winds means definitely that potential for the ash to make it farther. To answer the part, the question of Pahala, definitely to be impacted. We're also highlighting food for Wood Valley and Meleihu. I apologize if I missed that. But those communities are the ones that we're really highlighting for that potential. But yes, winds are, we have gusty winds at the surface. As they get a little farther higher up, they are a little stronger. So if the plumes are higher up, then the stronger winds can carry them farther. But today's the strongest. After today, we do see some weakening in the winds. So by this weekend, we will see it cutting back more to impact more closer to this immediate summit area, continuing down Highway 11.
Our next question comes from Andrew Hay with Reuters. Your line is now open.
Hi, this is a question for Wendy. We're at week three of the eruption. We've had that big eruption last Thursday, the 30,000 foot altitude one. And since the weekend, much higher emissions of lava on the East Rift Zone. And I wondered if if the eruption had in any way sort of plateaued. It had peaked in terms of activity. You mentioned it's 12 explosions a day, so it's a fairly steady activity at the summit, voluminous flows on the East Rift. I wondered if you could say kind of where we are in the grand scheme in terms of the overall eruption. Are we sort of in a middle section now?
Hi, Wendy Stovall, USGS. I think that's a good way to summarize it. We are in kind of the steady state. We're seeing continued eruption of lava on the surface in the lower East Rift Zone. All of our geophysical data and our seismic data is telling us that we'll probably continue to see that lava erupting on the surface, and there's no indication that the volume of what's coming out of the ground will decrease or increase right now. So it seems like a steady state down there. And also, same goes for the summit. We're still seeing lots of deflation occurring at the summit and these continued earthquakes, a pretty high rate of seismicity. So yes, continued explosions similar to what we've been seeing from the summit. So saying that we are in this, middle stage or, we're in the, it's erupting and this is what it's doing and it's probably going to do this for a little while longer.
Could you quantify a little while?
I cannot quantify that, unfortunately.
Okay.
What I can say is that the monitoring data that we're getting right now is indicating that we're just going to keep seeing what we're seeing. As soon as something shifts, if we start to see deflation around the lower East Rift Zone, then that will indicate to us that the magma is probably running out in that area. There's lots of different possibilities. It could pause in the lower East Rift Zone. Typically, Hawaiian eruptions of this style will the ones that are issuing the lava will pause, and then they will, the pressure will build up, more magma will accumulate below, and then it'll resume. We haven't had a pause since, you know, just in the first week of the eruption, basically when we shifted from one, from just the low fountaining and not very much lava, no extensive lava flows, into this really extensive lava production phase. And then at the summit, the exact scenario that we're seeing up there is kind of the playbook for the 1924 eruption. So then it lasted for 3 weeks. There is a difference between what's happening now and what happened in 1924. In 1924, there was no lava erupting on the surface. Everything that was drained from the summit lava lake was injected into the East Rift Zone without being erupted. So it's possible that we aren't really sure how long the summit activity will start, but we expect it to be at least 3 weeks, similar to 1924.
Thanks.
Our next question comes from Jenny Cooper. Your line is now open.
Hi, I'm not sure if this is for or Wendy, but I'd really like to have described for the layperson, the person who doesn't live on Hawaii, but might be thinking of coming to the Big Island, the predicted range for any significant ashfall from a larger summit eruption, or the spread of lays from ocean entry. Saying that there's lays near the eruption sites and a few miles downwind doesn't really speak to people, I think, to how limited the impact of lays really is. And then with ashfall, we're trying to let people know, you know, if they're going to Punalu, Black Sand Beach, or Hilo, you know, should they be concerned that they don't have the same kind of ashfall protection masks that are being issued to residents? We're just trying to get, you know, a sense of the true potential hazards or lack of hazards for people who aren't right in Pahoa or right at the summit.
Okay, this is Wendy Stovall, USGS. I appreciate your wanting to get this right, because we've seen a lot of incorrect reporting on this, and I feel like it's pretty, we need to kind of drive these points home about the reality of the hazards, especially in regards to lays. Lays is a very localized issue. It's really only around the ocean entry that you're going to get the super high concentrations of hydrochloric acid. So that's not something that anybody should be worrying about. People should steer clear of those ocean entry lays plumes. That's all. As far as the ash is concerned, we have had some reports of ash at Punalu'u, the beach, Black Sands Beach down there. And again, it depends on how high a plume is put up. And also how concentrated the ash is in that plume, how much ash fall is going to come out of it. Having a little bit of ash fall onto the ground or a vehicle is certainly not something that is going to keep you from driving or prevent you from, you could use a handkerchief. There's lots of guidance on there's an ash volcanic ash website, and there's lots of guidance for people who want to know about this to get a real sense of it. But the amount of ash that's coming out is, when people are driving up Highway 11, they'll see that there's ash on the road. But I wouldn't, this is really a Kilauea volcano only issue, and there are, you know, five volcanoes on the island of Hawaii, and it's, the island of Hawaii is very big, and this is a really small area that's being impacted when you look at the whole island of Hawaii.
Thank you.
Ernest, how many more questions do we have in the queue?
Right now we have about six more questions.
I'm afraid we won't have time for all of those. We've gone quite a bit over. Let's take three of those and call it a day.
Okay. Yes, ma'am. Our next question comes from Denise Leighton with USA Today. Your line is now open.
Hi, my question is for Tim. Tim, can you speak to how long it will take to implement those backup plans and the backup to your backup plans? And then if Highway 130 is compromised before Chain of Crater Road is open, is the only avenue left after that the airlifting evacuation of residents in Kalapana?
Yeah, hi, Denise. So the plans are already in place as far as working on those contingencies for Highway 130 and getting everything ready. And as I mentioned, you know, we are continuing to monitor. We are aware that the conditions can change at any moment's notice, but we are working toward that end. Yes, regarding Chain of Craters Road, we are working with our partners at the National Park Service and FEMA and the Federal Highways Administration as well to work on that as a possible alternative and emergency or evacuation route. You know, it should be noted with that as well, with the Chain of Craters Road, that is that there is a need to use that avenue once the improvements have been made on the road. It would be an evacuation-only route. It would not be, for example, it wouldn't be like a two-way traffic, you know, coming and going type of scenario or road. It would just be an emergency evacuation route for folks to exit the area only, not to kind of re-enter the area. But in addition, you know, the Governor David Ige and his administration as well is committed to keeping access and mobility open. So not only are there multiple contingencies for Highway 130, we're working on Chain of Craters Road, but yes, you know, the talks and discussions have been underway as well for possible air evacuations if it actually did come to that.
Okay, thank you.
Our next question comes from Tom Callis with the Tribune Herald. Your line is now open.
Yeah, Tim, are there any other possible alternate routes that are being explored?
Well, as you know, Highway 137 was cut off when the lava did make the ocean entry. However, north of Highway 132 and 137, the beach road access has been worked on. We've been working with the county and the state and federal levels have been working on that as well up to Makuu Road as an alternate access heading north from Highway 132. And so that is another possible option and route in addition, you know, for those heading north on the east side of the island. But we really are focused. The primary focus or priority is Highway 130, making sure that that remains open and accessible for those local residents to be able to access the community and evacuate if necessary.
And what's the status of the Chain of Craters right now? How far along is that? How close are we to seeing some work on the ground?
Well, that's difficult to say at this point, but we are close, and all parties are working together and in coordination to make that happen. You know, as you know, there is some lava from prior events that would need to be cleared and mitigated before that is open and accessible. But yeah, all parties are working, you know, as quickly as possible just to make sure that everything is taken care of as far as logistically. For that road to be a possible evacuation route.
We have time for a final question.
Our next question comes from Darren Sakia with Hawaii247.com. Your line is now open.
Hi, yeah, I know this is an ever-changing number, but do you folks have an estimate of the number of acres covered by lava from this lower East Rift Zone event?
Hi, Wendy Stovall, USGS. That is a great question, and I don't have an area of coverage. I will investigate that, and we'll try to put out a message about that. We have a new feature on our website, by the way. It's a little mini update. If you go to the website, it's on the right side of the page. It's surrounded by a red box. So I'll try to get that in there. And then also that update, the little mini update, we're going to try to do those more frequently. Those will be going out via RSS feed as well. And if you click on the more links, you'll see the list of them. And then if anybody wants to have full access to the RSS so you can put it into your reader, you could just email volcanomedia@usgs.gov.
Okay, thank you.
So I'm sorry to call an end to this. I know there were a few more questions, but we've gone way past our allotted time. Please do join us again tomorrow. We will have a continuing telephone briefing at 11 a.m. Hawaii Standard Time every day. Some of the same speakers, but also some additional speakers. They'll change every day. So please join us again tomorrow. And in the meantime, don't forget to go to the websites. All of the agencies who are online and speaking today have websites, the National Service, the Hawaii Volcano Observatory, Hawaii Volcanoes National Parks, and so forth, and the Department of Transportation. So please do check those websites for the most up-to-date current status announcements, and we'll see you tomorrow morning. Thank you very much. Bye-bye.
This now concludes today's call. All lines may disconnect at this time.